This is the New Talk, the Bob Davis Podcast. In podcast 482, we're going to talk about some issues and some stories that everybody isn't talking about. The things that perhaps all of the talkers and all of the mainstream media outlets are chattering about aren't really the things that we want to be thinking about. So we're going to try to transcend that process a little bit in podcast 482. Well, I'm going to talk about my crazy schedule, my sleep-wake cycle. You know, I'm getting my work done, and I'm going to talk about it in a second, but it was the recent campaign trail trip in Mobile Podcast Command, which was fabulous, by the way, that kind of got my schedule wacky. But I want to talk about Mobile Podcast Command briefly, because Mobile Podcast Command came from xgovernmentcars.com. They are now open in Forest Lake, Minnesota. They have a huge lot with all kinds of ex-government cars and trucks available for you. And I've told the story many times about how Ed Johnson and ex-government cars, I wanted a truck, and he said, you got to get an ambulance. And he found me Mobile Podcast Command, and it was great. It performed brilliantly on the trip. So ex-government cars is now open in Forest Lake, Minnesota at 356 19th Street. They have Ford, Chevy, Dodge, Toyota, and more. And we're talking about trucks. So if you're looking for a work truck, if you're looking for an SUV, they can get it for you. They also still have the great ex-government cars, the Crown Vicks, the Chargers, the Ford Police sedans, and eventually the new Ford Police SUV. Fast financing for all credit levels at xgovernmentcars.com. They have a three-day peace of mind guarantee, so you buy with confidence, and they do take trades. They pay the highest values every day without all the BS, and tons of service after the sale in terms of helping you figure out how to optimize your ex-government car or ex-government truck. 356 19th Street in Forest Lake, 763-777-8782 or xgovernmentcars.com. And if you bring in your tax return, they can count that as your down payment and hook you up and get you out the door with a ex-government car or truck of your choice, right? Ex-government cars, and yeah, I have the bullhorn.
xgovernmentcars.com.
Yeah, I'm on the nocturnal schedule, which is kind of neat if you are one of these people that gets up in the morning and listens to podcasts as you go to work instead of the radio, because this will be great for your Monday. But I am in the process of coming around again. It's kind of interesting that when I came back from the trip in Mobile Podcast Command, I drove basically two almost 24-hour stretches to get back to Minnesota. And I got back at about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and I went to sleep as soon as I got back. But then that put me on this overnight schedule all through March. And all through March, I've been edging closer and closer to basically coming around again. So today in podcast time it's Monday morning, about 3 o'clock, but it was Monday morning, when I got up at 4 o'clock, actually 5:30 this afternoon, and I didn't go to sleep until 10 o'clock on Saturday morning. So it's kind of funny that so this is the day I'm probably going to try to stay up. So that's how my Monday is going. I don't know how your Monday is going, but that is what I am doing. So I decided tonight, since I have a lot of time, I'm gonna do just a little research on breaking news and news, and kind of set you up for the week. Lots of news this weekend. Bernie Sanders won 3 Western states. I'm sure you probably already know about that. And there is now suddenly speculation on the Democrat side, and everybody has to run out and write stories about the Democrat Civil War. And there is also lots of chatter and talk about the National Enquirer story on Ted Cruz. I had some fun exchanges on Facebook this morning about Cruz and all about the last podcast in which I detailed the whole controversy with Cruz. Now, I'm going to talk about some other issues and other stories that people aren't talking about, because this is the stuff people are talking about. Aside from the Bernie Sanders story, the Ted Cruz story, you're also going to hear all sorts of discussions about Donald Trump this and Donald Trump that. The latest comments about American allies who are going to end up having to pay for U.S. protection, which actually is going to play in this podcast a little bit on some of these stories. But first, Ted Cruz. I want to say a couple things that people don't seem to understand. First of all, when you go to the Bob Davis podcast page, there is a little blog that goes along with every podcast. And that is a teaser of what's in the podcast. It is not a transcript. It is not a script of the podcast. People say, well, I read the script. And a lot of these podcasters have taken to getting a transcript of their podcast and posting it along with the podcast, which I don't understand. Why listen to the podcast if you're going to read the transcript? It seems rather silly. So what I do is I actually write a piece that goes with the podcast in which I write about the podcast. So that is a piece of original content. And then the podcast is a piece of original content. And we've seen two different instances, at least two, of people reacting to what they think is a transcript. One were the idiots in the second district that got all mad at Jason Lewis because of his comments about foreign policy after they read the blog, which described the podcast that Jason Lewis was in, rather than listening to the podcast and actually listening to the man reason about why he had a certain point of view about free trade or about foreign policy. And that frustrated me. And the last is people read this little transcript and they said, you're taking the point of view of the mainstream media that Ted Cruz is having affairs, which, by the way, the mainstream media is not even on this story, number one. And number two, I did not say that Ted Cruz was having affairs. I said there is a story alleging that he had affairs. And immediately, somebody mentioned a certain talk show host who is in the tank for Ted Cruz, decrying this kind of action by the quote-unquote press, shocked and dismayed, and how this leads to the end of the world in democracies, this kind of thing. I'm going to repeat that this is a common practice in tabloid journalism, and it's practiced on both sides of the political spectrum. It's called baiting the hook. If you catch fish with it, then you catch fish with it, right? And this is what they do. They will cobble together enough discernible facts into a story which, after it's published, clears the way for other outlets with deeper resources to investigate or not and to bring others out to comment. And this is what the National Enquirer story is on the Ted Cruz story, which we can refer to as sleaze or anything else. But remember that I didn't hear these same people throwing fits when Matt Drudge did exactly the thing, baiting the hook with Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky. I didn't hear them throwing a fit when the National Enquirer did the same thing with John Edwards, or even when Andrew Breitbart famously did the same thing when he published the selfie of Anthony Weiner, of Anthony Weiner's wiener, which was sent out to a college student. I remember him showing us the picture that he had. And I love people who respond, I can't believe he would do that. I saw a number of people on Facebook, I just can't believe it. Why can't you believe that? And what I was trying to get to was, people believe what they believe because they believe it. And they try to tell you that it's based on fact. So I pressed, well, how do you know? Were you with the senator and the women in question during the period of time in question? Because how would you know? Do you know the senator? Do you know the senator's wife? Do you know any of the women in question? Do you know people on the campaign that would have it inside? Why? Why do you say that? And the answer was that it basically proved my statement that Republicans in particular don't operate on facts and logic. They operate on faith and belief-based symbols and persuasion. It's something I've been talking about in podcasts. Republicans love to think that they're above all that because they think that they're the thinking. Republicans, well, I'm a conservative, and thinking is what we do. We don't engage in emotion. But the fact is they don't think. And the proof of it is that the response to my pressing this individual about how you would know whether or not someone had affairs or didn't, because the reality is that in politics, I mean, John Edwards' wife denied that he was having affairs. And then there was an emotional reaction between John Edwards and his wife on television when she finally figured out that he was lying. The response to me simply asking the question, have you seen the story, or doing a podcast about it so that we can discuss the potential lines of reasoning on why people released the story or who released the story, it was, well, you're probably voting for Clinton. That is the extent of the intellectual reservoir of most Republicans. And this is why, honestly, even with a Donald Trump, Republicans are going to be hard-pressed to win the election in 2016 because they're not thinking. They're having other people do their thinking for them, and they just parrot it. As I said, I did not say Ted Cruz had an affair. I speculated on the source of the story by asking questions and followed those lines of reasoning to their conclusion in their conclusion in my world. If history is any guide, it would be advisable for Ted Cruz supporters to do the same. But I think that that might be asking too much. And it's the same on the Democrat side this weekend. You had Bernie Sanders winning primaries in three Western states. Now, there is not a lot of population in Hawaii and Alaska, but he swept both states with huge margins, so he'll get the majority of delegates. I don't know how many people live in the state of Washington, but it can't be that many. He did kick ass in Washington as well in terms of percentage of the vote. Now, suddenly people are saying, well, that means Sanders could win in New York, Wisconsin, or Pennsylvania, and or that means the superdelegates are going to switch over to Sanders like they did for Obama over Clinton in 2008. First of all, people need to understand it's Bernie Sanders saying this, that this is his strategy. He's taking advantage of a victory just the way any candidate would. The people behind the scenes in the Democratic Party are not saying this. And yeah, I think most Democrats are socialists, even if they don't know it, even if they disavow it. And I think this is one of the reasons that Sanders has so much appeal for them and for even some people who like to think of themselves as Republicans. And you'll see why in a second. But superdelegates are a little bit different story. Superdelegates are elected officials and party officials, as I said before, wheels in the Democratic Party, and they're not easily swayed because they are, and they were put in, they were created back in the day to stabilize just this kind of process. We have to see who will win Democratic primaries in New York and Pennsylvania. And Wisconsin, it's easier to see a Sanders victory in Wisconsin, considering what Democrats have been through in that state in the last few years. But New York and Pennsylvania are going to be a different story. If Bernie Sanders wins New York and Pennsylvania by enough of a margin, then we'll see what happens with Hillary Clinton. You know, I've said all along that you're seeing this evidence of people resisting establishment control of the political parties. And that's one of the reasons that Bernie Sanders is doing so well as one of the reasons Donald Trump is doing so well. And then I kind of hedged my bets by saying that Hillary Clinton is, it appears when you consider the superdelegates that she is, I wouldn't say coasting to a nomination, but the assumption that she would be a better candidate and a nominee over Bernie Sanders in the Democrat world is not an unsafe bet at this point. But if he starts winning primaries, then we're going to see a different story. And then his statements about superdelegates shifting could then be true. My sense is that Democrats would find it much easier to get behind a Bernie Sanders candidacy than a Hillary Clinton candidacy. The problem is Bernie Sanders may be a better candidate than Hillary Clinton for obvious reasons, because it's hard to hate Bernie Sanders even if you aren't a socialist, right? Meanwhile, on the Republican side, and this is going to be these two stories are really the first two big stories that people are kind of probably not going to be talking about. But on the Republican side, you're going to start to see enormous pressure being exerted on known delegates for the RNC in Cleveland this summer by establishment Republicans and by operatives of the Trump campaign as the party clearly begins to prepare for a contested or brokered convention. There's some confusion about the percentage of votes that are still necessary for Trump to get the required 1,237 delegates, the number of primaries that he has to win, and the number of delegates that they have to win. Somebody said Ted Cruz, let me just put it this way, and thank you to one of my friends on Facebook that clarified this, because I may have had this wrong. I said that Trump had to win 85% of the contest in order to get the required number of delegates. But actually, I think it's Cruz that has to win something like 82% of the delegates for the next primaries in order to get 1,237, or it could be Trump. In any case, it's going to be an uphill struggle for both of these two candidates to win enough delegates to have a lock on a first ballot nomination, hence all of the shenanigans with releasing stories about Ted Cruz. And for people that think it was Donald Trump that released the story, and this is why I was talking about it this weekend, it could just as easily have been the Republican establishment or Rubio or Cruz himself for various reasons. I'm not saying it was. Please be careful about saying he said this or you said this. I'm saying it could have come from any source, depending on what is shaping up in terms of dynamics for the Republican convention. I would keep an eye on Paul Ryan, who is now beginning to make the same kinds of noises about not being interested in a presidential run that he did before he was nominated to be Speaker of the House. I wouldn't underestimate the Republican establishment's ability and desire to do whatever it has to do in order to secure their power base with a centrist-safe candidacy. And that means the return of a Jeb Bush or Mitt Romney and the possibility of a VP candidate or presidential candidate in the form of Paul Ryan or Marco Rubio or John Kasich. Truth is, I don't envy the delegates to the RNC. If the current standoff continues, there's going to be enormous pressure on you delegates, and it won't be offers to have lunch. It will be the nastiest kind of pressure, and it will not be pleasurable, and it will not be pretty. Well, since it's Monday, people are coming back from Easter and they're getting ready to get in and start working on their business. And if you're in business for yourself, you know that one of the biggest challenges for growing small businesses is showing how much your clients are appreciated. You can take them to lunch or dinner. A lot of people do these fishing trips or, you know, a boat trip on a lake, but usually you have to wait till summer to do that. A very big business is sending baubles with your company name on it to people, flash drives and things like that, and they usually end up in a drawer and forgotten about. So you can try something new, and it might work really great. I think it will. It's different. It's social and memorable. You socialize and bond with your clients engaged in creating something unique and individual to each of your clients. At Brush Studio in the West End in St. Louis Park. Let me tell you about Brush Studio. Brush Studio events are held in a relaxed and social setting. An artist will guide your group of clients through the featured painting step by step. It's not about painting. It's not about art. It's about having fun. And while they're doing that, you can get around and talk to your clients and socialize and get to know them a little bit better. And the thing is, your clients are going to be amazed at what they're able to create at Brush Studio. Brush Studio events aren't about painting, but they're about socializing and having fun together in a way that's different. And I think it's memorable. I mean, if your clients do it, they're never going to forget you. They have room for at least 55 people there, plus catering from Crave in the West End. Brush Studio features over 22 brands of beer and an extensive wine collection. It is a fun, sophisticated new way to create a new bonding experience for your clients that they're never going to forget. And I think they're going to love you for it. And also, the Brush Studio people are event planning ninjas, so I guarantee you they're going to have a good time. Here's what you do. Check out the Brush Studio banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page at thebobdavispodcast.com or visit brushstudio.net, or you can just reach out to them old school using the phone, 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700. Brush Studio in the West End, St. Louis Park. So that's kind of a recap of the political stuff this weekend. And so then let's look at three or four stories that nobody's going to be talking about, which I think are things that people should be thinking about, because we really need to work on, I'm not sure how to say this, I think we really need to work on transcending this current, for lack of a better term, discussion that we're having in this country, because it is very reactive. It is very dependent on media that is bought and paid for. And I'm talking about all of it. I'm not talking about just the spots. I'm talking about TV show hosts and news organizations and everything. It's all bought and paid for. And they're all under the control of some Svengali somewhere. So you have to be very careful of what you believe that is written or said and by who is saying it. You have to be careful of all that stuff. And I would like to be able to transcend some of this discussion, because nobody's really talking about the ultimate effect of what is going on. And let me give an example. With both Trump and Sanders, a new kind of foreign policy is beginning to emerge. It is trade protectionist, and I hate to say this, It is isolationist, literally. It's Trump wanting to withdraw from the world. It's Bernie Sanders saying that the international banks and corporations are at fault for all that ails the United States. It's Trump saying U.S. allies have to pay for protection and using Saudi Arabia as an example, or Bernie Sanders and Trump saying that American jobs have been shipped to China. And people believe it. They're telling you what you want to hear in many cases. I've heard it in Tea Party meetings. I've heard it in Republican meetings. Well, they shipped all of our jobs to China. What do you have to say about that? Trump this weekend said that he would boycott oil from Saudi Arabia if they didn't provide funds for U.S. troops to fight ISIS. And I thought to myself, oh, so U.S. troops are now going to be going into Western Iraq and Syria to fight ISIS under a Trump presidency, right? And the Saudis are going to pay for it. And I thought, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but you realize that the Saudis are funding ISIS, since ISIS and Saudi Arabia are both Sunni and they are engaged in a battle with Shia, right? The Shiites in Iran and in the Wahhabi, what do they call them? The Alawites in Syria. The Saudis are Wahhabi. And you realize that the largest emerging oil markets in the world are China and Asia, and they are closer to Saudi Arabia than the United States. We're talking about 700 to 800,000 barrels of demand growth a year. Even now, 70% of the oil demand growth in the future will come from Asia. And so it wouldn't bother you to have China enter the Middle East as a major player, would it? And why wouldn't Saudi Arabia say, well, we'll make a deal with China and Russia. We'll have Russia in Syria and we'll have China in Saudi Arabia. So how does that help the United States? You see what I'm saying about this kind of short-sighted and very isolationist foreign policy? The Saudis are not going to pay for quote-unquote American protection. First of all, the Saudis have an army. They have an air force. Most of our aid to Saudi Arabia is in the form of parts and expertise. So if we pull that, where are they going to get it from? Well, you know, the Chinese will just hire American workers. That's what will happen. Meanwhile, Bernie Sanders stands in Flint, Michigan and says this. In 1960, Detroit, Michigan was one of the wealthiest cities in the world. Corporate America said, why do I want to pay someone in Flint, Michigan a living wage when I could pay slave wages in Mexico or China? Now, he could have been talking to a Tea Party and they would have applauded that. This is one of the problems with so-called Republicans and so-called Democrats, because the problem with the scenario is this. Michigan wasn't competing with Mexico and China from 1960 to 1980 when it suffered 90% of the depletion in industrial output due to the failure in the American auto industry. It was in fact competing with automation and later IT, which reduced the need for labor and made production more efficient. And it was competing with the southern tier U.S. right-to-work states like Texas, where U.S. automakers built plants as they closed them in upper-tier Midwestern Union states, and they still are closing them in upper-tier Midwestern Union states. And by the way, Mexican workers don't make that much less than American workers for companies like Audi building plants in Mexico or Texas or Tennessee or any place like that. Volkswagen, for example, has a huge plant in Tennessee. Finally, U.S. automakers were competing with cheaper, more fuel-efficient, better-made cars coming from Europe and Japan. And they were doing this. The Japanese and the Germans were selling cars in America, even under increased tariffs. Remember the Pinto and the Chevette and the Matador, and I am old enough to remember when our neighbors bought a Volkswagen. And I can remember the conversation between my dad and the Medfords. I think their name was the Medfords, who lived next door because they had a daughter that was getting ready to go to college and they bought a Volkswagen. And my dad was asking him how much he had to pay in increased tariffs because the price of the car was much cheaper in Germany than it was in the United States. But he still didn't care because it was such a cool little car. And that was the first Volkswagen that I have seen. So the U.S. auto industry was dead long before NAFTA because, much like the radio industry versus podcasting and digital media, it's really hard to compete when you suck compared to something new and different that works better and gives people what they want. Okay? So it's very interesting that we have two candidates that both think the same way when it comes to this kind of thing. Chinese and Americans, for example, compete for different jobs, with Chinese doing lower skill and lower tech manufacturing and Americans doing high tech value added manufacturing. A lot of people don't know this, but a fair amount of the so-called trade deficit is due to parts which are imported from overseas. So a company will have parts made overseas. They come back over for reassembly in the U.S. or vice versa. If you don't like comparative advantage in trade, then stop eating corn from Iowa if you live in Minnesota, and stop being, a guy who goes and buys Korean TVs. A lot of this is coming from labor unions, which gave almost $500 million to Democrats and left-wing political causes in the U.S. from 2012 to 14. I'm sure they're contributing heavily to Bernie Sanders, and I wouldn't be surprised if they're contributing to Donald Trump. Wonder why? Because they're protecting themselves. And by the way, no amount of trade protection is going to save jobs in industries which are dying for good reason. You're going to be hearing a lot about the new book. Oh, I just want to say one other thing. I read a great story this weekend about steel tariffs. And there's all kinds of talk about manufacturing in the United States. And, you know, George W. Bush, the Republican, enacted steel tariffs. And it increased the price of steel considerably across the United States. And it put people out of work. They're estimating now that it cost American taxpayers $800,000 per job saved by George W. Bush's steel tariffs. And this is why Republicans are just as dumb as Democrats on this front. So here's another issue. Let me check the time. You're going to be hearing a lot about a new book by Robert Gorton, who is an economist, called The Rise and Fall of American Growth. I pronounce it Gorton. It's Gorton, G-O-R-D-O-N. He says America, the Western economies aren't going to grow anymore because most of the innovation of American growth from 1900 to 1960 or so came from so-called low-hanging fruit. And you also have economists like Larry Summers and Stiglitz advancing the theory that we're done growing and we face something called stagnation, which is slow or no growth, or stagflation, which is stagnant growth with inflation. And just as an aside, I'm going to give you this for your Monday because I think it's really important. Listen to the technology optimists. Emergence and the continuous advances in computing power, the Internet of Things, broadband speeds, cloud computing, mobile applications, artificial intelligence, robotics, and nanotechnology will yield a broad range of new disruptive products and services we simply cannot foresee now. Just as much as the average citizen in 1910 could not have foreseen the growth of radio or the growth of home appliances. We cannot see the kinds of things that are going to come as a result of these kinds of technologies. Futurists predict that it isn't large companies, but new startups and small entrepreneurial ventures that will take advantage of these advances because big companies tend to make incremental changes. Entrepreneurial ventures make, much more dramatic investments and advances because they can. Now, some people react to this kind of a thing in fear. I've talked about this. You have people who are terrified of the future all over the place. There was a tremendous reaction when the CEO of Carl's Jr. this week, Andy Puzder, says he's interested in developing an all-natural fast food outlet that is fully automated. They already exist in Japan. They will exist in the United States. This is why Americans should be worried. Two of the most dynamic candidates in this election, regardless of party affiliation, are trade protectionists and they are statist-oriented. They believe that government solutions to existing problems are better than market solutions, and they believe in government solutions to existing problems that will slow or choke off new developments of new technologies that will generate the building blocks of the next economic growth period. It has been said that if we had not had the Depression in 1929, which really was caused by the reaction to the stock market crash, we could have possibly had televisions. We would have had the 1950s and the 1930s in the United States, and we might have averted World War II. The U.S. economy grew only 1.4% in the first quarter after contractions last year or slow growth. The Federal Reserve is already talking about a considerably darker view of the economy suddenly. There's all kinds of articles this weekend about how They're having difficulty actually getting a handle on what GDP is these days. And it's also true that government has grown considerably in the last 10 years. Is it possible that government size, regulation, and involvement in business and personal life growing more and more ominous is contributing to slow or no growth? The answer is not to wall ourselves off from the rest of the world and trade only between the states and demand payment as mercenaries from allies that have depended on us for decades. I realize that that kind of goes against some of the libertarian philosophy of foreign policy, big government home at home and big government abroad and so forth. But these international problems, these international foreign policy issues are not easily solved. And you have to ask yourself when you hear these kinds of stories, how is that going to work? That we're going to just tell the Saudis that they have to pay for us. And again, the Saudi Arabians have a large economy, but it's dependent on the price of oil. And it is nothing compared to the $19 trillion U.S. economy or the $19 trillion European economy or the $14 or $13 trillion Chinese economy. So ask yourself how it's going to work. We would bankrupt if we demanded payment for defense structures worldwide from our quote-unquote allies. We would throw the economies of South Korea into depression. We would throw the economies of Japan into a worse depression than they're already in, and so forth. How is it happening that people are embracing these ideas? And I'm going to tell you again, because I've been telling people this for weeks. If you're listening to talk radio, watching cable television news, or reading what passes for news on the internet, you are being duped by people who are working for candidates or parties or interested individuals who are trying to persuade you to their point of view. If you're a Black Lives Matter protester and you're blocking the street because you're pissed off because police this and the police that, you don't know that George Soros is backing that and fanning the flames to get people upset. It doesn't matter which candidate you support or which candidate they support. It doesn't matter which side of the political spectrum that you hail from. People are operating on emotions. They are operating on emotions like anger and frustration, and that is a blueprint for catastrophe. Just consider some of the problems we're working right now, which may become serious crises by the time a new president is sworn in. And actually, I think most of these have a real good chance of engulfing President Obama with chaos before he leaves office, chaos of his own making, because he has been so unresolute in the way that he practices foreign policy for various reasons, some of which some people agree with, some of which some people don't agree with. These are some things for you to consider heading into the week and some things for you to consider as you think about politics, because you may not have heard about them. First, corporations and sovereign nations are developing serious debt problems. Obligations for national debt are skyrocketing. State and national pension obligations across the world can increase that potential debt enormously. A good example is Flint, Michigan, where pension obligations and mismanagement led the city to cut corners, raising taxes and increasing the fees for water. Some of those people were paying $800 a year for water, $600 a year for water, and refusing to use certain chemicals to treat the water because of the cost. And then you see what happened in Flint. It wasn't because Rick Snyder cut the budget. It's because Flint mismanaged their pensions and their budgets. These debt problems, and that's just one tiny little problem, these debt problems, which are everywhere, Chicago, Detroit, Los Angeles, California, sovereign countries across the country, developing economies like Brazil, Venezuela, and so forth. These debt problems threaten the entire integrity of the world financial systems. Now, there are certainly bulls who see 1.5 to 3% economic growth, such as it is, as a good sign worldwide, but it is predicated on the central banks injecting huge amounts of fiat money into the system, and we already have effectively 0% interest rates, which is killing savings. And where do you go? I mean, it's the pushing on the string analogy. In fact, the ECB is actually supporting negative interest rates. It's not good. There are plenty of people predicting another economic collapse several times worse than 2008. You may not be aware of this. Some of them are crackpots or charlatans, but not all of them are. You have to understand what they're predicting to get a handle on what it means. For example, the guy that wrote, what's that book? Rich Dad, Poor Dad, who's written God knows how many, has been looking at a demographic change in terms of investors for a long time, because he says that 2016 is the key year that the baby boomers turning 70 will start to withdraw money from their 401k programs. So, you know, their 401k accounts. Now, I don't know, but I'm saying he's one of the people that is saying there's going to be knock-on effects from those withdrawals. Instead of creating inflation, and this is what I think is one of the key issues and very dangerous, money creation by central banks is increasing inequality, and it isn't trickling down to Main Street because those closest to the money printing are benefiting, and economies across the world are stalling. So those are that's a national, international economic issue which could engulf the country, and I think probably will, before November. And it could conceivably engulf this president before he leaves office in January of 2017. Second issue, chief among the potential basket cases in the world is surprisingly China, which is selling reserves, forcing more money into the banking system, and increasingly concerned about the unrest and political instability as the result of the fact that their command economy is wobbling. I think China presents the most potentially dangerous, dicey foreign policy problem that the United States faces. They are selling the feed corn. In other words, they're selling reserves, which is not enough yet to be a problem. They hold a tremendous amount of foreign reserves, U.S. treasuries. And people are saying, all these countries are selling their U.S. treasuries. They must hate us. They're not doing it because of that. They're selling their U.S. treasuries because they're burning the feed corn. They're eating the feed corn to keep their economies going because they use government injection of money in the form of debt to build things that nobody wants because it's a command economy, hence the empty cities and the roads to nowhere, the bullet trains, and so forth. Third issue, and I think this is very interesting, and I'm just going to say, I mentioned this briefly in one of the podcasts this weekend. Unconfirmed sources say that as many as 400 ISIS fighters have infiltrated into Europe. Now, I say unconfirmed because in none of these stories do they name the government officials in the United States, in Iraq, in Europe, who are saying and spreading this story. So we don't know if it's true, but I think it's something to keep an eye on as a potential to engulf President Obama before he leaves office and to engulf the election in the United States. We do know that the perpetrators of the Paris and Brussels attacks were tied to ISIS and either came from Syria as part of the refugee flow or were associated with people who came in through that flow. According to a Guardian story, at a recent strategic meeting by the directors of ISIS, a shift in their strategy to escalate terror attacks in Europe was discussed using these fighters already embedded in Europe. The only way that you're going to be able to know whether this is true or not is we'll have to see it come out in the wash, so to speak. So there are three stories that you're probably not going to hear much about, and a couple of issues, three issues, because everybody is talking about Donald Trump and Ted Cruz and the idiots running the Republican Party, or Hillary Clinton and her email server. And if Bernie Sanders continues to win primaries, then everybody's going to be speculating about what's going to happen at the Democratic convention as well. If you just stop and think about the issues that I mentioned and the three stories there that I just mentioned in terms of potential problems, and I haven't even mentioned the lower tier stories like Russia or the situation in Brazil and Venezuela and whether Cuba is going to help us with Venezuela, which they aren't, you can see why I don't see any single person on the political front who can even begin to discuss those issues, let alone lead us, and if and when they become president during this crisis. So if you're sitting around talking about this stuff this week, throw a few of these out and see what happens, because nobody knows anything about them, I'm willing to bet. And where did I learn about these things? Well, I learned about them from reading the news and sifting through and looking for the grains of truth and the connective tissue in these stories. And I'm not saying they're all true. I'm saying they could be, but at least we're not talking about Ted Cruz having an affair, right? And isn't that the problem with the current political sphere, is that we're talking about all these reactive things? So this is one of the things that podcasting can do that mainstream media can't. And thanks for listening. I was talking a little earlier about how my schedule is flipping around. You know, so it is, what time is it? It's 3:07 a.m., and I am bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. And as soon as I finish this podcast, I'm going to start getting ready to go to yoga. I'm going to do a yoga sculpt this morning at 6 o'clock in St. Louis Park or Uptown. I'm not sure which. And I don't know what you do for exercise. As you know, I do yoga. I do yoga sculpt. I do power yoga. I do hot yoga. The room's over 100 degrees. You have very high humidity, especially in the summer. You sweat a lot and you can get dehydrated even if you drink a lot of water. People don't know that a lot of the problems associated with exercise, either headaches in some cases or other stuff, being sore afterward, is related to dehydration. For example, I thought being sore after yoga went with the territory until I found something called Hydrus. Hydrus transformed my yoga practice because I'm fully hydrated. Let me give an example. If you drink water, it can take up to 45 minutes for that water to have effect. So if you drink water, half a quart of water before you go into a yoga class or soul cycle or something, you're going to feel it. You're not going to feel it until almost the class, when the class is over. Hydrus works very quickly and it will transform your yoga practice or your soul cycle or your CrossFit, or whether you lift or you have loved ones who are doing competitive sports. Hydrus makes a huge difference because it gets electrolytes into your muscles at the cellular level without sugar that you find in traditional sports drinks. So you can very quickly go to the edge, and that's where you grow. That's where you get stronger. That's where you get better. Being on the edge is what it's all about, and that's why I love Hydrus. And yes, I'm going to be Hydrusing up before this morning's sculpt class. Join the performance hydration revolution. Visit hydrusperformance.com. That's Hydrus, hydrusperformance.com. Don't forget, if you're scheduling client appreciation events for this quarter or next quarter or third quarter or fourth quarter, try something new at Brush Studio in the West End in St. Louis Park. It's a great, memorable opportunity for you to bond and socialize with your clients in a great setting. Reach out to Brush Studio at brushstudio.net. Click on the banner at the top of the BobDavisPodcast.com page or call them at 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700, Brush Studio in the West End, St. Louis Park. Don't forget, X Government Cars is now open in Forest Lake, Minnesota, 356 19th Street. They still have the great Crown Vics, the Ford Police sedans, the Dodge Chargers. They'll eventually have the Ford Police SUVs. They've got great trucks, work trucks, vans, and SUVs, Ford, Chevy, Dodge, Toyotas, and more. Fast financing. Check out xgovernmentcars.com, and I still have the bullhorn.
xgovernmentcars.com.
So as soon as I get done with this podcast, I'm going to go upstairs and start getting ready by fixing up my Hydrus for yoga this morning. Don't forget, Hydrus will transform your physical practice, especially if you cycle, do CrossFit, lift, competitive sports. Hydrus. Hydrus makes a huge difference. It allows you to take it to the edge. It's a new high-performance beverage that helps you hydrate at the cellular level. Check out hydrusperformance.com. For more information, Hydrus, hydrusperformance.com. Now, pilots, if you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, Alpha Systems has the solution. Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. The bottom line is Alpha Systems AOA saves lives because it's so important to have a visual indicator when you're turning on final approach. And they are FAA approved. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more information about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcast.com. You'll see the AOA indicator there in that banner. Click on that, takes you to Alpha Systems. Thank you for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com or iTunes or Stitcher.com or TuneIn or blogtalkradio.com. I want to say thanks to the people who have been listening to the new radio show, the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show on the Patriot AM 1280 in Minneapolis. When I get new affiliates nationwide, I'll be mentioning them. Right now, it's just the Patriot, which I am very appreciative of. Or you can listen to those shows at gcnlive.com. And if you want to hear more of these podcasts, of course, listen, share, and visit thebobdavispodcast.com. Thank you for liking and sharing and favoriting and commenting and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, where I'm bdavis7843. And of course, thanks for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com. If you look for the picture of Mobile Podcast Command, you click on it, you can make a donation. It's used for diesel fuel and maintenance and Komodo Dragon coffee and beef jerky and macadamia nuts. when I'm on the road. So I got to start collecting. We got to let that that account kind of fill up before we head out again in Mobile Podcast Command. Thanks for listening to Podcast 482. Okay, so maybe we can transcend all of this mainstream media madness together.